You may simply say that the death of Jesus on the cross was an additional liability to any other kind of death that you might have reported. There are other striking things about the death of Jesus, that is, if he was the Messiah, the fact that the Jews didn't accept him. That was something you have to explain. Suppose I'm trying to teach Christianity to the Chinese, never heard of it before, and I tell them, first I explain in great elaborateness what the Messiah was. I would explain that it was a wonderful ideal that the Jews for centuries had developed, and that as a matter of fact, at a given time in history, a man came who was the Jewish Messiah. And now, if you want to know, I would say to the Chinese, if you want to know the welfare of mankind, all rests upon what that man was and did and on your response. I'm not very far, am I, from the typical missionary approach. But then I'd have to say to those Japanese or Chinese, I must tell you that although he was the Jewish Messiah, in the main the Jews didn't accept him. Discredited. Be like teaching some Indian religion about some Swami, for instance, and saying, though I'm not an Indian and this comes from an alien land and an alien time, I am a devoted admirer of the Swamis of the past. And people would say to me, well now, what do they think of him in India? Oh, I'd have to say, very, very few Indians have much use for him. It's not a very successful part of Indian religion. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. That's something that has to be thought about. After you've blown this person up, or built him up, I guess is the word that they use in the advertising world. After you've built up the figure of Jesus, and then some prosy person says, that's all very well, but the people that knew him best and the people whose ideal he was supposed to fulfill. No, I have to admit that they didn't follow him. A few did, and those that did, well, of course, they were given power to be called the sons of God. That was different. As far as he was accepted, it was fine, but in the main, they turned against him. Well, there you have a problem, a historical problem, not a theological or philosophical problem, but you have a historical problem. And the Christians had to put up with that. And, of course, they had to say that although the Jews had a good chance, well, what did they say? They said it was just like the Jews to turn him down. They were hard-hearted and stiff-necked and a few other words that you can get out of the Bible. Type of person, and this is the way they always did. In fact, one of the speeches of Acts, the speech of Stephen, keeps saying all the time, the way you handled Jesus is just the way you did with a man like Moses, for instance, long ago. You're always resisting God's prophets. In fact, it's to Jesus' credit that they didn't accept him, because they never did accept the good people. Best thing you can say for Jesus, he was treated the way a really too good a Jew was regularly treated. And that's in your favor. And is a reflection, is it not, on this whole historical question of the death of Jesus. Again, in the circumstances of the historical environment. Though, again, if you're talking to the Chinese, or if you're talking only to the pagans of Corinth or Athens in the days of Paul. It's a little remote. However, they must have raised that question. And I'm sure most of them found it easier to believe that a good man was put to death by his fellow countrymen than to believe that God raised him from the dead. Because, I say, after all, the death doesn't raise any supernatural problems. So, in some ways, it's the easiest thing to believe in the Christian religion. Only thing you might say is, why didn't they do it sooner? Man being as wicked as he is, and Jesus being as good as he was, it's a wonder he ever lived at all for any length of time, or ever had any converts. Of course, looked at again historically, the Christians put the blame for the death on men, not on Jesus. They had a difficult problem. They had to say that the people that put him to death were guilty and wicked as anybody could be. What worse could you do than put to death a man as good as this? And at the same time, to say that God intended it and Jesus expected it, and well, I don't quite know whether to say not only expected it but rashly exposed himself to it. Now the story, take the whole group of actors around the cross at that scene, is an intensely human and complicated scene, worthy of any drama. And each person's part in that drama is worthy of dramatic reconsideration. And we're much more likely to do that in a realistic way than the early Christians were, because they really didn't care about that. But really, you got the makings here of a very complicated novel. And some people have taken advantage of it. Lew Wallace did long ago, and Sholem Amash, I think, has dealt with it. And you got the makings here, because there's so many factors come in. And a historian or a novelist would try to see what the emotion of each person in this drama was towards the scene. Again, the Christians didn't pay much attention to that. They disposed simply of, if they disposed at all, of the motives of the people involved. There is the motive of the Jewish authorities. Jealousy. There is the motive of Pilate. Very complicated. They simplify it. He didn't dare oppose the Jews. He believed Jesus was innocent, that's clear. He didn't dare oppose the Jews. The motive of Judas, the major secret for the attention of novelists, almost. Why did a disciple of Jesus do what he did, what Judas did? Was there anything to say about the soldiers who were the executioners? Well, not very many people enter into the sympathy with executioners anyhow. They just take them for granted. I suppose they're simply doing what they're told, and you let it go at that. The other people that were martyred at the same time, two of them. It'd be rather interesting to know what they were thinking at the same time. And we get some comment in one of the Gospels. Of course, the spectators, they're both the friendly and the unfriendly. The friendly are scared, some of them run away, and some women remain. You can pretty well guess what they were thinking. Plenty of chance for drama there. The unfriendly, they can make nasty remarks up the last minute. People always do at a hanging. And we're not so familiar with hangings today as they were 17th century England, but in a hanging, plenty of spectators around. You hear what the crowds say. And so the gospel writers pick up some of the comments, spectators. And above all, of course, the victim himself. And the gospel writers have a total of 7 words that he spoke from the cross. Not all congenial to each other, but the words of a dying person are always important and thoughtful, interpretive, and they're recorded. Well, there were then many outlets for Christian interest in this event as a historical event, and without going any further. In the main, however, the gospel writers are very objective, as they are all through. They rarely betray or talk about the feelings of the actors, not even of Jesus. They let events and words speak for inner psychological analysis. So they have not invented any more than a little. It would be invention, probably. Conjecture, psychological conjecture. They are, however, doing other things than by merely telling a dramatic narrative. And I don't think for a moment they are intending by this narrative to elicit sympathy or to entertain the reader, or to give him even the dramatic emotion. I don't think that's what they're at. Nor, on the other hand, do I find that they are mainly concerned to tell us of the importance of this event in cosmic history. In saying that, I'm contradicting what most scholars say. They mostly say that the events of Jesus last week are in length out of proportion to the rest of his life. 6 chapters out of 16, or 4 chapters out of 24, going through the various gospels, is a good deal to give to what's called the passion narrative. There is a good deal of detail here, although much of it is merely preliminary stories, much like the rest of the gospel. They have, however, other interests, neither literary or dramatic or exactly theological. If it weren't for the later Christians, you would never read these stories and know that the salvation of your soul and of all men depends on what happened this Friday afternoon that you're reading about. You're told that by the theologians, aren't you? But you wouldn't know it from reading the Gospels. You're reading a very interesting significant story and the climax of a career that you have been following for some chapters with interest. And it's dramatic enough and interesting enough, but you wouldn't know that. I remember seeing in a bookstore in town here, Catholic bookstore, a book with this title, God Died at 3 o'clock in the Afternoon. You know what that author thought. He thought he was really telling something or reporting something. And I don't know what was in the book, but I pretty well guess. It was a retelling and interpretation of the subject of tonight's lecture. The death of Jesus, wasn't it? Well, the gospel writers, and they of course represent a deposit of early Christian thinking on this subject. They are therefore are part of the material for early Christian thought. Have some things to say. One thing that's pretty clear, I think, is that they are sensitive to the question of who was to blame. And that's a question one might well ask. It would be absurd, wouldn't it, to study the death of Socrates in detail without asking just how the thing came about. Maybe Socrates to blame? Or was he really an admirable person? And must the blame be on the other side? Well, there's no doubt the Christians felt the blame was on the other side, but there was a complicated situation, as you remember, because the way the story is told, there were two types of authority in Palestine. The Jews with their autonomous self-government, and the Romans as the dominating, occupying power. And the story represents Jesus as having passed before both these authorities.